Hi.
Hi, welcome to a podcast by Deity Animal Rescue. I am Lindsay and this is...
I'm Ellen.
And we wanted to start today's episode by catching up.
Yeah.
Talking about our week. So how was your week?
My week was good. I am really excited for Precious and Shadow, who are on their way to the snow, their rescue in New York. That was definitely a highlight.
Update us on Precious and Shadow. How did we meet them?
So Precious and Shadow, we actually met here on this sofa when Bob Ferber, who's like known now as Bob, everyone asks like, what would Bob say? What would Bob do? When Bob Ferber brought them in for his podcast episode, they came in and we fell in love and they were just the loveliest dogs. They were actually adopted out together from North Central a couple of years ago. They are litter mates, brother and sister.
Wow.
And arrived as strays. Okay. At Agora, which is a county shelter over here.
And so we knew that they were bonded, but we didn't know that they were biologically related.
That was a new development, apparently,
yeah.
That I learned from Sierra at the shelter. She's we just found out they're actually brother and sister.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But they had been long-timers at the Agora shelter. They had interest independently of each other, but the shelter, who is very kind of discerning on who is actually bonded.
Yes.
Or not.
Yes.
These two decided, and we've seen it, they are actually a bonded pair. So they wouldn't let one get adopted without the other in hopes that they would be rescued or adopted together. And that is what happened. We were introduced by a wonderful grant foundation that has adorned us with gifts from heaven.
In the form of money.
In the form of money to continue to do what we do. And another gift that she gave us was connecting us with this other rescue that they also grant in New York. They used to be here in NorCal, but they were gifted like 40 acres.
Oh my God.
In upstate New York.
It's a dream.
They have a brand new state-of-the-art facility there. They have people who work there, live there. They have a Airstream on the property for those of us who want to go to New York and stay there.
Maybe, yeah.
And that's where Precious and Shadow are going.
That's so amazing. And for several reasons, but one that popped up in my head, actually two, is that when we met them, we loved them and we're like, these are wonderful and adoptable dogs, but we're in LA. People don't have backyards.
Right.
People don't have a lot of space here. One husky takes tons of effort to keep mentally and physically happy in your home, never mind two. So when we met them, I was like, oh, I just hope that someone sees this where they can give you the life that you deserve, because a bonded pair of huskies is really hard to get out.
Right.
So the fact that they're going somewhere, A, which is ideal for a husky breed type dog, it's cold, there's space to run, and B, this area in the country is not as overpopulated with pets as we are, so they can help get dogs out of these LA shelters into somewhere where it is better suited for their breed. Totally. What lucky dogs.
Seriously. They actually, Linda, who runs this organization, she's been in rescue since the 90s. Mm. So they actually transport dogs in from the South because they don't have, to your point, there isn't the pet overpopulation problems there. And being that she's from California, she knows the dire situation that we're in here.
Yeah.
So we're like so excited about this connection, because part of the things that you and I really have been wanting to do is to have that opportunity to be the boots on the ground here, to get the dogs out of Lancaster, yes. Palmdale, yes. Baldwin Park.
Yes, these overcrowded places, yep. Where dogs are being euthanized for space.
Yep.
And there's places in the country that not only have the space, but they're like the right place for these dogs.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
Precious and Chatto are going to the snow. And I say that with chills up my back. I know, they are so going good. To the snow. And Linda told me that just a couple of weeks ago, she had a bonded pair of cattle dogs. Again, another breed that takes a little bit of, you know, finesse as an owner.
They're not called cattle dogs for nothing.
Right. And she got those two adopted into a wonderful home together. So, cool. So, yeah, I'm so excited about that.
That is really exciting.
Yeah.
This week we rescued Betty Boop. And I want to talk about how that happened in our rescue, because we are currently at a place in our rescue that we don't have space. We don't have the resources. We don't have fosters available, especially for our big dogs who have some more needs than maybe just like a little dog who can pop into your apartment and hang. So you were to go to the shelter to pick up a little dog.
I was.
I wasn't able to accompany you. And I knew, because this is not my first rodeo,
right,
that when you go to the shelter unattended, I'm going to be in a situation where I'm going to have to get mad first, but then like maybe say yes. So I'm walking into my friend's house and I get like a lot of texts from you because that's like your text style. And you said, wait till you see this. And I was like, shit.
You're like, shit.
You
hate
had
her.
One job. We have one foster. She could take a small dog. What is this dog going to be? And it is a senior pit bull.
She is a senior pit bull.
Senior pit bull.
I got smart that day. Didn't I? I undermined the situation.
A smart is one word. I think you could also say manipulative.
Okay. whatever you want to call me, I'll take it, because I met this girl. Her name, we named her Betty Boop, and there was absolutely 0% chance that I was leaving this dog at the shelter.
Yes.
So what I did was, because I knew that there was going to be a little bit of pushback, I wasn't sure how much. I did sweat a little, even though it was freezing cold. I had a puffer jacket on, but I knew you were going to be pissed off.
It was an emotional sweat.
It was an emotional sweat.
Yeah.
So what I did was I went ahead and sent a video to Carla, our foster Carla.
Yeah, who also can't say no.
Exactly. Yeah. So I knew what I was doing. And what did Carla say?
Bring her to me.
Exactly. And okay. Then I texted you.
Then you texted me and you said, could she be my birthday present? Like, what? I'm not a monster.
Right.
I'm not going to say, like, no, you can't have a birthday present. And also, this dog is, like, something really special.
And also, your birthday isn't for a month and a half, but whatever.
Yeah, and also, don't forget, you only get one birthday present. You don't get a birthday present every time you go to the shelter. So we met Betty Boop, or you met Betty Boop.
No. Hold on. Rewind.
What?
So I met Betty Boop. I sent you video or videos, and I said, I am so in love, I'm having a moment, I don't know what to do, can I bring her home, or can we take her? And what do you send back?
Sure.
Nope.
Oh,
okay, that was it. There was nothing else. I was like, I said to Rita, I gave Rita like this look, like she said okay, and we're both like, ooh.
Yeah, what did you want me to say?
I could tell by the okay tone that you're sitting there seething on the other side, like I knew this was gonna happen.
I was seething.
But little did you know that there were also this whole slew of other dogs,
I'm sure,
that I wasn't gonna even hit
I'm
you
sure.
with.
Well, the thing is, I want to take all the dogs, and I love all of the dogs. You knew that this particular dog, had I been there, like there was never even going to be a question. But what it comes down to is our foster network, right, like who we have available. We are just the two of us. We run this organization, and we get these dogs into forever homes, and we can only help as many as we have the resources to help. So to me, because I didn't realize that there was an entire network of people coming together against me.
Not against you.
I was like, well, we have nowhere to put this dog. So you brought her. She goes to our vet because she's got like some things going on.
Yeah.
And I meet her the next day and I mean, I just like fall to the floor. She's divine. She's like this little potato-y darling.
Right. And I will add to that comment, it does take you a lot to fall to the floor. So that speaks to the specialness of this girl.
Yeah. I mean, I've been known to say, because you do always say like, do you love her? And usually my reaction is like, I like her a lot.
Yeah. I like her a lot.
This one I really love. She's amazing. And point being, she's has some health stuff going on. She's got to get through it. And we do have this wonderful vet that we work with who has this isolation room. And when a dog comes from the shelter and they have like an upper respiratory, we don't want them around other dogs. And we want to make sure that they're going to be healthy before they move into another environment. She was there and she is a happy girl, but she has some work to do. And we knew that she couldn't go to a foster home with other dogs because she could be contagious.
Right.
But I also knew that she's such a happy, human-oriented girl that if she had to stay in this isolation room to get better, she wasn't going to. I think she was going to get depressed and she was going to get sad.
Right.
So amazingly, we have another foster who reaches out and they're so in love with her. They don't have other dogs at home because Carla does have other dogs
right.
at home. And now, even though Betty Boop is on the road to recovery, I would say, like she still has some hurdles ahead of her.
Yeah. We're waiting for a PCR test to come back with some answers. So.
That are hopefully all negative.
Yeah.
The fact that she can recover in this home and like be filled with love and hope and like there's something to fight for, I think is going to be critical in a positive outcome here. I mean, like I'm still hoping for a positive outcome. I realize that health is its own thing, but like we're so lucky to have that
foster network. Totally. Yes. So the foster that you're speaking of is our foster Christy, and she travels a lot. So she has made this choice to foster instead of adopting a dog because she feels bad leaving the dog all the time. So she has become instrumental in, you know, helping us here and what we do. And Christy stepped up as soon as we started posting Betty in our stories.
Yeah.
We got a text saying, does Betty need a foster?
Yeah.
And it was at the perfect time when we were at the vet and we realized that Betty has a runny nose. She had also had an episode of either like tremors or a seizure in my car on the way back. So we knew something was up. Mm-hmm. She has some kind of an infection, which makes her contagious to other dogs.
Right.
So the fact that Christy doesn't have any other dogs and she just sent this text.
Yeah.
The timing was perfection.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, I feel like that is just the kismet of just, you know, Betty, the dog. Ugh. Like she's so deserving of the universe bringing her good stuff now. So
totally.
Hoping that the PCR test comes back negative for distemper.
Same. Because that girl has a life to live.
Yeah. And by the time this episode airs, we will know that. Mm-hmm. So fingers crossed.
Yes. Well, and in that spirit, I wanted our guest today to share some more information about fostering and especially fostering these special needs dogs who are so, they just really wiggle their way into our hearts. And I think a lot of people look at these dogs and they're like, I would love to help, but I can't because of their emotional attachment or worried about the amount of extra care that they're going to take. And this particular foster who we're going to talk with today never shies away from that kind of stuff. So I'm excited for everyone to meet her.
Me too.
Our guest today is a very special part of Deity Animal Rescue. In her personal and professional world, she fills so many roles, including Director of Development for Hello Sunshine. And in our world, she's a foster extraordinaire, bleeding heart animal lover, physical therapy enthusiast, emotional supporter, special needs caretaker, and way more. Kat has fostered 47 dogs, and there are moments when she is caring for 3 deity dogs at one time because there is unlimited room in her heart. Kat is our go-to gal for small, defeated, overlooked angels to relax, find peace, and receive love and security until their forever home is found. She never shies away from these precious souls with medical needs, physical ailments, or surgery recovery patients, and is always more than happy to give a dog in need a temporary spot if they need a soft place to land. We are eternally grateful for her calm energy, perfect dog names, and her support of our mission, and we want to share her with you. Kat Ramsberg, welcome to a podcast.
That was really lovely. Yay, kind of embarrassing for
why? It's all true.
Just to think someone like sat and wrote that. I don't know.
Well, but it's all true.
It was like one of us. It's not like we hired someone to write it.
I figured.
I have always wondered why you were drawn to fostering.
When I moved here from New York, I did not want to leave New York and come to LA, but one of the perks was I could adopt a dog because my
life... Like face-oriented
reason? Yeah, just the way life is. I lived uptown in New York, and so when you leave for the day, you leave for the day.
Uh-huh.
And I lived in a fifth floor walk-up, and like just all these things that just would have made dog ownership a challenge.
Yeah.
Budget in New York is kind of crazy. So when I adopted... my dog Louie, I had intended to foster him because I did not mean to adopt him, as is often the case. But the day that I was going to take him home to foster, this family walked in and they wanted to adopt him. And I was like, no, this is my dog. And so I ended up just adopting him. But then I had like set the wheels in motion to foster. I had already filled out all the applications for Best Friends Animal Society. And so about a month or two after I brought Louie home, they called and they're like, we have this dog. We really need him in a home because he's not thriving here at our center. So like, is there any way you could take him? And his name was Chocolate, and he was severely malnourished, and he would only eat boiled chicken. And that was my first experience fostering. Wow. It was like just trying to keep this dog alive because it was a touch and go thing. Oh. And for a month, I would get up every day and boil him a breast of chicken. And then like throughout the day, I would just try to give him as much chicken as possible. And anytime I'd present him with any other food, he was like, no. And after a month, he was certainly alive. So mission accomplished, but he wasn't quite thriving, I think, in the way that he could have. So Best Friends ended up moving him to another foster, a woman named Ronko Fukuda, who really has become my foster mentor. Huh. She taught me everything. She can get any dog to eat. She can get any dog to do anything. And since that moment, I've just kind of like, really, whenever there's a dog, I'm like, okay, well, I'll figure it out or I'll call Ronko and she'll teach me how to do it. And that was just the start of it. So Chocolate was the beginning. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And Chocolate, did it make you nervous at first taking in a dog who was not readily going to eat? Like, were you like, how am I going to do this? I just adopted my first dog. How am I going to get him to eat?
For sure. I think that for me, it was really touch and go whether Chocolate would be alive when we got up the next morning. It was one of those dogs, like, I was putting syringes of water in his mouth to make sure he got enough fluids. But then you would see these little signs from him that he wanted to live. Like, his tail would wag as he just kind of laid in his bed and stared at you. His tail would wag. Or eventually, you know, like, I came home and he came to the door and I was like, okay, this is something. And sometimes with dogs, you just get that nugget. That's all they'll give you.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, it's working. Keep going. And so, yeah, it was overwhelming for sure. But also, I saw the need and I saw that not everyone was going to be able to do it. And emotionally, I somehow was able to do it. And I think that kind of planted the seed of maybe I would take on these special dogs. And that's the kind of dogs Ronko takes on as well. And so I saw her just making little changes to her life that allowed for things, or like the creative way she would come up with ways to help a dog.
Like in your house that you have like 17 rugs.
Yes.
Because you take a lot of dogs who can't move around well on slippery surfaces.
Exactly.
So you found a way to make it work. But in your regular life. Like, you lived there, mm-hmm. but you made it suitable for dogs who need that sort of support.
Yeah. Well, when I was thinking about adopting a dog, my rules were like, you know, I think a way a lot of people come into fostering and a lot of ways they come into adopting, which is like, I want a potty trained dog that is like well behaved and doesn't shed and, you know, whatever. And you just don't get that dog. I mean, sometimes you do. Sometimes there's a random dog. Sure. But I, you know, and I was like, oh gosh, if a foster ever like wet my floor, I would lose my mind because I'm like a very clean and tidy person. And, you know, cut to 7 years later, like, I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Okay, pee on the floor. I'm glad you're safe. Poop on the floor. That's fine. That's what Lysol's for. I don't care. You know, and if they can't get around, you know, so I've got Ruggables now. So just throw them in the washing machine. And then for dogs, like when Marigold first came to me, and certainly my dog, Louie, as his mobility decreased, yeah, you just like, you think your house is, has enough rugs, and then you find, they find that one square, you know, quarter edge or whatever, that that's where they always fall. And so you go to Target and you get another $15 rug and throw it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I just was able to pull them all up because Marigold is mobile now and Louie's not with us anymore. And I have been washing them over the last few weeks. And I have a stack of like 15, you know, 2-foot by 2-foot rugs.
That you just that I don't collected yes. over the years.
Yes.
That's amazing.
You mentioned Louie, mm-hmm. and when you were fostering him and the people came to meet him and adopt him. Can you talk a little bit about that emotion that you felt in that moment that led you to say, uh-uh, he ain't leaving?
The visceral reaction.
Yeah, the reaction.
Yes. Well, he was actually at the Best Friends Center in Mission Hills, and he had come in from East Valley in May of 17, and he had gone into a foster home in June for 3 weeks, because they'll send their fosters out for like 3 weeks so they can, you can get notes on them in the home and whatnot. And then I started volunteering there the day after he came back, and that's, and he was the first dog they put into my arms, because you train on the small, easy dogs
right,
there.
Right.
And he was the first dog they put in my arms, and I don't know, I just was like, you're weird. Like, I really like you, you're weird. He wasn't at all what I was looking for in a dog. Like, I wanted Sandy from Annie. Like, that was the dream. And Louie was like this little 7-year-old deformed minpin.
Yeah, like, not Sandy.
No. Oh, gosh, no.
Oh, you mad? Oh, that upset you?
Marigold loved Louie.
I know, that's your gun. I know. Louie's
you love Louie? You love Louie? Yeah.
So in August of that year, they were going to do the big super adoption event. So they like clear the shelters is the goal. And the night before, you know, the great thing about Best Friends is you kind of can advocate for a dog if you've fallen for one. And so I talked to Michelle, who was in charge of like media appearances, and Louie, along with two other dogs, went on the news, one of those news things, and he did horribly. He is not photogenic. He is not, he's not at all, you know. And so, but my goal was like, I'm going to get you at home this weekend. And so like,
well, you did.
You did. I mean, I got there early. I cleaned out his cage. I was like, I gave him a little bit of a bath and everything. And the very first family that walked in, I will never forget. It was this little woman and her husband was tagging behind with their two little kids. And she was like, we saw Louie on the news and we came here to meet him. And I was like, get the F away from my dog. And I was like, oh, I don't think he's a good fit for you. Let me show you these other two dogs. And they ended up actually leaving with both dogs. They came for one and they ended up falling in love with both. And then another family kind of came in and we're looking at Louie and I was like, I don't think this is the one for you. Let me show you. And finally, this lovely woman, Lizzie, who was in the medical building at the time, she came out and she was like, look, we all know you're going to adopt him.
You can't keep turning people away.
It's been 5 months, you know. So, you know, think about it. And I walked into the adoption office. I was like, give me one of the adoption notes. And they put it on his kennel. And at the end of my shift, I took him home. And I didn't know what I was doing. I literally, like, I didn't have anything. I did not plan on bringing him home that day. So we went to the pet store and I was like, what do I need? And wow. They set me up. And that was the beginning of my most epic love story.
Wow.
And you advocated for him until the day
yeah
he left us.
Yeah.
She still advocates for him, and dogs like him.
Well, yes. He was a tricky one. You know, he was a shelter dog, and he needed immediate surgery on his leg. He needed a full dental. They suspected at the time he had spinal issues. So, you know, most people going to adopt a $25 dog aren't thinking like, great, and in the first month, I'm also going to lay out $2,000 totally. In medical expenses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that he kind of had an uphill battle, and the really lovely people at Best Friends connected me with a vet that they liked, and the vet was like, look, I'll do it for you at cost. And so she did the whole thing for $800.
Wow.
And it ended up just, you know, being what it was. And Louis was a very special dog, and really made me a much more patient person. And I think that really has helped with the dogs you guys bring me from shelters.
They do test your patience, I'm sure.
Yeah, sometimes.
Did you have dogs growing up, or was Louis like your first dog?
I had a couple here and there. I don't think I was necessarily like a good dog owner as a child. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was my priority. Mm-hmm. So I remember a couple dogs like coming and then going to live on the farm, a few years later.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just had like an instinct. My childhood was not the most stable, so I don't know that we were ever in a place long enough to incorporate that. So it was always a dream to have one.
Yeah.
I had cats because they're a little easier.
A little independent.
And cheaper, you know. Mm-hmm. But
I've never had a cat, but I've heard.
They're cute, but I prefer dogs.
Yeah. Or fruit bats, whatever you want to call them. She's mad.
You called her a fruit bat.
Well, in love. What? Don't you remember when I got the email? It said this little dog came in. She can't walk. She needs rescue right away. And I called Ellen and I said, I'm going to go get her. And don't you remember that?
And you got there right before close, right?
I did. Well, luckily it was the shelter right by us. And I saw her and... Oh my God, we're gonna have to put the picture up in here because her intake photo was tragic. And she had use of her back legs in that they weren't paralyzed, but she wasn't able to walk.
They were collapsed under her and turned in and really like gnarly. It was clear she hadn't been able to use them for quite some time. Like the fur was gone, there were calluses.
Like it hurt her. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the shelter, I come from this mindset of like, with enough love and food, they're just gonna, tomorrow they're gonna wake up and she's gonna be walking. So when I went and met her, I like lifted up the blanket and I was like, oh, like you'll be walking tomorrow, don't worry. And then the vet tech comes in and picks her up and this dog loses her fucking mind. She is biting and thrashing and like, essentially wiggled out of this woman's arms. Like she could not bear the thought of being touched. And I was like, well, shit, we've already planned, like this dog is coming. And I had to tell Ellen, I was like, she's a little bit grumpy, but I'm sure that. I'm sure with the proper love and care, she will be just a little less.
She's grumpy. She just has a lot to say. Like she makes her opinions known.
She did. I mean, I put her in the car. I did have to carry her with a blanket. Like she didn't. She wasn't ready for like the full skin to skin yet.
Stop bossing people around.
And she went. She sat in my car and just screamed at me the rest of the way. And I set her up at my house in her little, like I didn't know what her potty capabilities were. Yeah. So we had that like plastic thing, and I called you and I was like, "Can you?" Well, we knew you were gonna take her anyway, and you came and picked her up, and I was like, "She is a little grumpy." But I'm sure that with love and affection, she's going to be fine tomorrow. But can you tell us what tomorrow brought?
A fully potty trained dog.
Okay.
That was the most exceptional thing, that she, even despite not having her legs, she refused to go anywhere but outside. She was like, I will drag myself across this floor. Like I'm in like, what was that movie? Saving Private Ryan. She like drags herself and she won't like go. She will not go. And so I was like, well, that in itself makes her highly adoptable.
Yeah, that's
so like, let's see what else there is.
Yeah.
And she ended up being, I mean, the sassiest funniest, like, she cracks me up on a daily basis. This dog is hilarious and she knows it. She's a lot to say.
Yeah.
And she's just adorable. And, you know, I mean, I've had her now for 3 months. And in that 3 months, she's had three surgeries, her teeth and then each of her legs. And every time she just comes back like, well, yeah, this is the way it should always should have been.
Yeah, like finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not a dog like some dogs you get. And it's just it's so clear. They're like grateful and sweet. And she's like, well, it's about time.
Yeah.
She's like, give me my legs back. I got shit to do.
Yeah. Well, and we didn't know her capabilities once we were going to provide these surgeries. Like, even the doctor was very hesitant. Mm-hmm. She's tiny. She's got like these little toothpick bird legs. And it's not... He didn't expect he was going to go in there, add a little hardware, and she was going to, like, poof, be ready. And he started on her worst leg.
Yeah.
And the next day...
She was walking around.
She was walking.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
She was like, catch me if you can.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really cute. And then so we just did her stronger leg. And then the reasoning there was that if the worst leg didn't take, at least we wouldn't have messed up her...
Usable leg.
Right. Yeah. And to be specific, we were fixing the patellas. Yes.
Correct. Yeah. She is camera shy. That is her one flaw. She does not like cameras. She does not like being pictures being taken.
Perfect set for her.
which is amazing because she does believe she's a little star. So
totally.
She is a star.
But also the doctor, something to note, he said that he believes that she's been like this most of her life.
Yeah.
And this is what? How old do we think she is?
9.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and that's just a Chihuahua thing. Often their patellas are just messed.
Yeah, but for her to have been unable to have her full mobility since she was a baby, and like Kat said, she didn't have any hair on her back leg. She had calluses from dragging around. It was truly shocking that only hours after her surgery, she popped up like she had been waiting for this.
Yeah. Because I thought she's not even going to know how to walk at this point, and it was going to be weeks of me.
Did she ever walk? We don't know.
Right. We don't know. And I mean, she came home and they were like, you know, the first 2 weeks, like you might have to hold her up to go to the bathroom and stuff. And she was just like, I'm home. Where's my food? And was like crawling out.
I had a good nap. Let me eat.
Yeah.
She's just like so ready to live her life. And I think that's like the rewarding thing when you get a dog who, you know, was on a euthanasia list or I have a friend who loves that I foster so much, but I had a particularly challenging dog and she said, do we actually need to save them all?
She's like, well, me? Yes.
But you end up getting a dog like this where, like, I completely would have understood. Like, I wouldn't have liked it, but I completely understand the rationale that, like, she's a senior Chihuahua who cannot walk. It's going to be at least $15,000 to, you know, get this dog up and running. Who's going to take that on?
Right. Well, to be clear, that is not something that typically our organization would be able to do, but thanks to a grant that we received for her medical, we were able to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And she's a Chihuahua. She's got 10 years left to live.
Oh, yes. Especially this one.
Oh, my gosh.
Especially the sass in this one. She is here to stay.
Yeah. And thankfully, you know, there are people out there who want Chihuahuas who talk as much as she does.
That's true.
She has a lot to say.
Never a lonely moment.
No.
Well, I think that segues really well into another dog you're fostering named Abe.
Professor Abe Goldstein, Esquire.
Excuse me, yes. He is one of those difficult cases who... I think about this, it's really hard for me to think here. A lot of people adopt a dog excited to have a dog in their house and add a dog to their family and all of the fun that's going to come with that. Abe was excited to find a place where he would be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about Abe and his life with you and what we're looking at in terms of his future?
Yes. So Abe is somewhere between 12 and 100 years old.
Yes.
The vet estimates probably 15, 16.
Like for real. For real. Yeah, that's not an exaggeration. No.
And he's one of those gorgeous dogs, hypoallergenic, that everyone wants to adopt. Mm-hmm. But I think he's been through some trauma and...
Well, he came to us from the streets, right?
Yeah, from the streets.
Yeah, we
had been there a while.
Found him in a park.
Yeah.
Well, someone else found him in a park, and they were, I don't understand how, based on now that like we know him, picked him up, got him in the car, and apparently Abe was like very happy to be there. I remember though, now knowing him, because I'm looking back, they sent us an email. They said, we found this dog.
Here, she might bark less if you hold her.
Oh, I gladly hold you.
They said, we found this dog. He's a little nervous at first, but he warms up, and he really likes to hang out inside. They had like this open table cabinet thing, and he likes to just lay inside the cabinet.
That sounds right.
And I was like, oh, this guy, he just like needs to know that he's safe, and he needs to know that he's loved. But that never changed. Oh my gosh, she swims. She's like swimming in the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Point being, Abe is not the type that's going to bring some sort of like glittery, fun emotion to somebody's family.
Yeah.
And it has proven difficult to find people who are willing to give the dog what the dog needs.
Right.
And it was a long process for you to work with Abe and figure out what he needs. Like, what did you learn about him?
Well, I think that's exactly it. Most people are adopting a dog for the companionship, for that other member of their family who's going to participate in the family. And Abe, like, the best way to describe it is he's like an asshole cat. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't want to be a part of things. He wants to like sit back and watch what's going on. Right. And that's just like so the antithesis of what we think dogs want and should be.
Totally.
And so really, it's just about giving Abe space. Like, as long as it feels weird, because your instinct is like to interact. And I think a lot of times we do get shy or scared dogs, that it's about like teaching them touch is nice, and there are good humans in the world. And
right. And
you have this patience with them, but eventually they come to you and they're like, oh yeah, no, I do want my belly scratched. Not Abe.
No.
And I've had him a little over a year at this point. And there are key times when I'm allowed to touch him, which is right when I come home. He gets super excited that I came home. Like, he jumps up and down. I can touch his face. I can give him kisses. Aww. For about 30 seconds, and then no touching. The rest of the day, the rest of the life. And occasionally, maybe twice a week, when I get up in the morning, he thinks I'm just coming home. So he gives me that 30 seconds to say good morning to him.
Nice.
But otherwise, so nice. I'm not allowed to touch him.
Okay.
And I think part of it was like training me, not really training him mm-hmm. to be different. It was training me that like not all dogs want affection and not all dogs want to interact. And I worked with a trainer recently where we actually did an exercise where I didn't touch him for an entire month, even coming home when I've normally been allowed to, because her question was, is this something that he feels he has to do for you?
Oh,
And so
like let you touch
let him touch. Yeah. And so for 1 month I didn't touch him at all, and then now we only do consent touch, so he has to consent if I am allowed to touch him or not.
How do we recognize consent in
Abe? So when I come home, and he normally gets excited that I come home, I just stand right in front of him. I put my hands out where his face, I would normally touch his face, and if he nudges me with his nose, then I am allowed to touch him. And if he doesn't, if he just kind of hops around in front of me and is excited, that's what he does, and I don't get to touch him.
Oh, that is so important. I just feel like there's a lack of consent in mm-hmm. caring for dogs. A lot of like picking up when you want to move them, or moving them to cuddle with you. And Abe, though a pretty extreme example, mm-hmm. shares that they're not here for us.
No.
Like, this is his life, and he's choosing not to have an affectionate one.
Yeah.
What a teacher. He's a professor. Yeah. He's a teacher.
He didn't get his name for nothing.
That's true.
But he really, it's so interesting, because like I see the good dog in him now, a year later. Like, I just, he makes me so happy, and we coexist in my house. Like, I buy his groceries and he doesn't pay rent, and that's really our relationship.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, he's a healthy dog, and he's happy. He's got beds all around the house. He, you know, flips around and rolls on them. He does treat puzzles. So I'm like, okay, this is your life then. Yeah. This is fine. You know, we made the decision recently. I think it's okay to say that he's going to stay with me as a permanent foster, because mm-hmm. when Abe does not have consent, he acts out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have some bruising, recent bruising the other day he got me. You know, and that's just
well,
his
way.
Well,
you didn't realize you needed consent to walk by him.
I did not know that. I failed to know that when I bent down to pick up a spoon, I should have asked permission.
We didn't know.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I think he's deaf and blind and was mistreated. So
how many teeth does he have?
He has, I think, one left.
It's a sharp tooth.
It's
though.
A sharp tooth though. Hurts. Yeah, he's definitely gets some blood draw, but mostly it's just massive bruising and that lasts for months because he does have strong jaws. But I think now, you know, when he first came to me, I was getting bit every day.
Yeah.
And I remember I used to text with you like, it's been 0 days since. and now it's like maybe once a month.
So good.
Yeah.
That's so good. There's a consistency in the dogs that you foster that I think is important to note. And it's that they're not necessarily your ideal dog. You're not looking to foster dogs that are perfect for you and your lifestyle.
No.
And for Ellen and I, that's so important because these are dogs who just need a soft place to land. They need someone who's going to take care of them, give them security, give them space, give them love, whatever it is, until they find their forever home. And a lot of times we're rescuing dogs from the shelter and we literally cannot rescue them without a place for them to go. And people are like, well, are they energetic? Are they potty trained? Are mm-hmm. they whatever?
And do they have anxiety? That's the big one.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. But point being, A, none of these are necessarily the dog you would have been like, that's the one that I want. And B, once they've spent time with you, you do see the part in them that you do love. Like you would mm-hmm. have missed out on those opportunities if you were like, oh no, I don't want a dog who doesn't want to cuddle me. Like yeah. you would have never seen the funny, well, I'm assuming that there's a part of Abe that you're just like obsessed with. You never would have seen it.
Yeah.
I think that's just such an important lesson for fosters because we struggle so much with finding fosters for dogs who have special needs. And it's such an important lesson that like, honestly, my lesson is just not about you.
No, and I get it. You know, people think people are like, oh, I live in an apartment and I did it. And so do I. Mm-hmm. I have a 2-bedroom condo and, mm-hmm. you know, we have breed restrictions and rules and I live on the 3rd floor. It takes a while to get a dog out to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, like, you don't have a yard.
No. And so like, yeah, there's a lot of things, but I find that especially the dogs that you tend to bring me, which tend to be the seniors, tend to be the ones with some needs, they're just like grateful to be out of the shelter.
Yeah.
And so I have a really like low expectations of any of them coming in. I assume no one is potty trained. I assume they've got some medical thing that's going to be complicated. Like she's on 3 medications right now.
Maybe that's why she's yelling.
A little gabapentin never hurt anyone.
Yeah. Is that why you need to be...
Oh my God, you're in huge trouble.
You've got to go.
Don't stare.
Staring is rude.
That's yeah. rude.
That's what I do when she sometimes needs to stop staring.
Oh, she needs privacy.
Yeah, so I just take what you give me and we figure it out together. And
well, to your credit, it's often sometimes you reaching out to us. We'll get a screenshot of a dog at the LA city or county shelter and you're like,
could this be a deity dog?
Could this be a deity dog?
Well, because I think that's what's great about you guys is that as long as I say like, I will take this dog, you know, you definitely have to do your homework of like, you know, can we afford this dog medically right now? Like we already have 3 of this breed and they're not getting adopted. Like, of course there are factors, but for the most part, if I say like this completely messed up senior dog on its last legs, I will foster it. And you're like, great, let's go yeah. get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they deserve a chance.
Absolutely.
And I mean, this one in particular, like Marigold, if it wasn't you, I don't know how she could have gotten to this point.
Right. You've been a total advocate. When we were speaking with Dr. Balfour, who's her orthopedic and does a lot of our dogs, we really default to him mm-hmm. and his opinions. And mm-hmm. on her, he's like, listen, I can't promise you anything. It may work. It may not work. But I'm here if you want to try.
Yeah.
And
he's a miracle worker.
He really is. Seriously. But so are you, because you're like, you guys, I think we need to try, because mm-hmm. she really has it in her. She's really trying.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and there was nothing to lose. That leg either needed to come off or be fixed. And we had the grant.
Right. Yeah.
Willing to do it. I'm willing to nurse her for the 6 weeks it takes. Let's just do it.
Totally. Yeah. But I think that where you're special is that someone else may have been like, this dog has not stopped biting me since I got her. Like, I don't know if I can continue to do this. Like, how is this? Like, how can I keep doing this? That there was not one moment where you like, I'm sick of getting bit by her. I'm sick of getting bit by Abe. Like, I realize a lot. It's ideal to not get bit by any of your foster dogs.
Well, her bites were so sweet, though.
Oh.
They weren't too sharp. And then she lost all her teeth a couple weeks after coming to me anyway. Yeah. She was one in the way back. And so now, like, I always say, it's like getting attacked by a gummy bear. Because it's just like this wet gummy thing that tries to bite your finger. And you're like, well, you're not really doing anything. And she's actually stopped doing that. It was really interesting. She was a completely different dog when I came home from Louie. When Louie passed, you know, it was like she was with me the last month of his life. And she, it was always interesting, actually, with fosters in general. Like, they were very aware that Louie was the permanent dog. Mm-hmm. And the rest, no matter if I had one at the time or three or four or five or six, I've had up to eight at one point at a time. And they always know Louie's the one. And I think especially in his last month, you know, she was very patient and kind of kept to herself, but like interacted enough. And she would always kind of sit on the other side of the couch and watch us. And I got home from having to help Louie cross, and she immediately crawled up into my chest where Louie used to lay. And she still, that's her place. She's like, oh, this is mine now. And I don't think it's an empathetic part of herself. I think she was waiting.
I was going to say, like, maybe she just knows that's what you need.
Yeah. I think she was just waiting to claim the space for herself.
The spot's open.
But she turned into a different dog. Like, she's just not trying to bite anymore. She's just very sweet and cuddly. Last night she did something new too. I was just sitting on the couch and she came up, started like rubbing her head on my leg. Just like a cat. Oh. Yeah. So.
See, we can pretend that's empathy and not that she had a scratch on her head. I'm sorry.
She's so funny.
I did want to ask you, how are you doing with Louie being gone?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where he was never a healthy dog. And a lot of friends have sent me videos, like, that they had on their phones or whatever. And I think with all of us, when you've got a dog that you've had for so long, I had him for 7 years, you don't realize how much they've declined.
Totally.
And especially because I was such an advocate for him and his health. Like, he had seizure disorder, so we had a neurologist on call, and he had an internist on call. He had a cardiologist on call. He was going to rehab twice a week for physical therapy, you know? And I was just like, this is great. This is keeping him up and running. And then I'm like looking at these videos. I was like, oh no. So, you know, he and I had a conversation about a month before that he knew he was ready, and he knew he was existing for me, and he said he was happy to do that as long as I needed him to.
Oh, so you gave him permission.
Yeah, he gave me permission, really. And just he was a dog who would eat no matter what. Like, he would literally come home from the ER from having like a seizure cluster and be like, okay, where's dinner? You know? Yeah. And so we decided that his signal to me would be that he would stop eating, which is just nothing he would ever do. I know that sounds like a normal one for most dogs, but that was not Louie at all. And he was just eating just fine. And then one night, like the Thursday night, he just like, he was at the point I had to hold him up in front of his bowl to, you know, and he would eat if I held him up, and I held him up and he just looked at me and went,
oh my God.
And I was like, okay. And then I made the appointment for the next morning. Next morning, he ate his breakfast, about half of it, but then like looked at me like, I'm just eating because I'm hungry, not because.
Right.
And so we did it that morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I've also been there with the whole like, I'm not going to do it to her. I'm not going to let her go longer than she should just because of me. And then, you know, like you said, you see these videos and you're like, okay, well, I did that, you know, I let it go for too long. In the future, do you think that you will be a little bit more discerning with, you know, the timing of things, or hard to say?
It's hard to say, because I think I still have days where I'm like, he had plenty of time left. I'm selfish because I said I couldn't do it anymore, you know? But at the same time, I do think it was the right time. His doctors felt it was the right time. You know, I read a statistic recently, like, once you've put your soul dog to rest, every dog becomes easier after that. And for me, it was almost the reverse, because one thing we didn't talk about is that this past year, I also helped two deity dogs pass. And one of my favorite deity dogs, the only dog I've ever fostered that I wish I had kept, also passed this year. So I'd had a year of building up to, like, loss of dogs. And it felt completely different. But at the same time, I think that that built a relationship with my vet, who performed my two, and then Louie, of just knowing, being able to communicate about the right time and when, and that it's not about you at that point. It's about being there for them. Because one that we talk about is RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, where you guys basically got the call that she needed to be euthanized, and doing it at the shelter wasn't what we all wanted to do, because she was a 21-year-old dog who had been with her family her whole life. And no judgment on them for taking her to the shelter. I don't know the circumstances behind that. But I literally picked her up at 3 p.m. one day and took her the next day, and and everyone agreed. And so, you know, it's just I think it's a privilege to be there in their final moments.
Totally.
So I don't know. I don't know the answer to your original question. I think so.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
You know. For Big Girl, for me, which was in 2021, she didn't want to leave me. And she was hanging around for me. I know that for sure. And we had that similar conversation where I'm like, you need to let me know. And she ate and ate and ate. And then she also, at the same time, she was a large pit bull, and she lost her movement, her mobility in her back legs, her spine. And she'd become incontinent, and you know, that was hard, because she was, I felt like she had judgment on herself for that, and she also didn't want to, you know, do that to me. So, but she was still eating, and she was still, she still had life in her eyes, and she was still happy, and she was still part of the family, and you know, just in everything. And then one day, just like you said, actually, it was the night I looked at her. She looked at me, and I was like,
okay,
shit, there it is. And it, like, it's like a fucking knife. And then I even had a moment. I'm like, okay, look at this dog. Like, what have I done? Has this been too long? But I don't think if she could speak that she would have thought it was too long. She was just, she wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And I let her go the next day. And then with Layla, who my most recent senior, she had an aggressive cancer. And there was no denying that. I mean, she basically looked me in the eye and spoke and said, it's my time. So, you know, that one was a little bit easier. Not, you know, I say easier, but like just in knowing.
There was less deliberation.
Well, that's what my foster mentor Ronco had said, is, you know, Louis physically was gone and had been for quite some time. Mentally, he was there. His eyes were sharp. He responded to things, you know. And Ronco, in helping me figure out what to do, said, you know, this is one of those moments where you get to give your dog the dignity that humans don't have. And would you want to be kept alive in this state? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, pull that plug, you know? Totally. And that was like kind of a moment that released some of the guilt for me of like, oh, we actually, this is like one place in the world where we get to treat animals better than humans.
It's true. our one vet that we love so much, Dr. Rachel out at she's out at
Oaks
in Thousand Oaks, and kind of earlier on in our rescue career, we had taken on a dog. She was a puppy. Her name was Amelia. She came from the Baldwin Park shelter. And she was diagnosed with distemper. Mm. And she's actually on our wall over there. But she went to Oaks. And at the time, Lindsay and I were both like, throw everything at her. This dog is not going to die. We are not going to let her die. It's not going to happen. She has everything to live for. And we literally threw our entire hearts and souls and everything that we had.
You were sleeping at the vet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at one point, I remember one night, she had gone neuro and she was just totally shaking. And Rachel looked at me through my tears and she's like, listen, she's like, I think of it as a gift, because Rachel had been like trying to get me to that point to say, okay, it's time to let her go. And I was just like, no, like, what if? And Rachel's like, she's not, it's not happening. Yeah. You need to make this decision. And she's like, I think you should make it tonight. And when she said that to me about it being a gift, that's when I was like, huh, she's absolutely right. And when I tell you that Amelia, who was like a cane corso mix, probably 10-month-old puppy, left her body in my arms, the calm that she felt, that I felt in that moment, was exactly what Rachel said it was. It was a gift. Amelia was at peace. She was, I could feel her energy still around in the room, and it was calm, and she was happy, and she felt blessed and loved. And, you know, from that moment on, you talk about your soul dog. Like, Amelia wasn't actually my soul dog, but she was one of our soul dogs. It's true. Like, it's made processing every single death after her, after that moment, a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And I think a thread that is very obvious to me, and I say this because I am a step away from both of you who have lost these soul dogs, is the communication aspect of it. We've been talking about communication in fostering and how you communicate with Abe and know what he wants, and she's obviously very communicative as well. But you have to be sensitive enough to take the communication as it comes. Louis ate because he was hungry, but the day before he told you, he said, this is the promise I made you, and I acknowledge it. Like, understand me when I'm saying it to you. Big girl said it to you too. And I think that a lot of people can be like, okay, I mean, we had this connection and we made this promise to each other, and he fulfilled that promise, but he's eating today, so I'm gonna forget the promise. I think that both of you made a really difficult decision for yourselves, but in honor of your dogs, to be like, they fulfilled their promise, they did what they were supposed to do, now I have to do what I'm supposed to do. So kudos to both of you.
They gave us consent.
They gave you consent. Consent is very important.
It really is.
And it is such a privilege to like be there in that moment, because like, whether it's your soul dog who you've had for a while or Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who I had for 24 hours, you know, like, for her, she was 21 years old. She had a tumor in her throat and basically was starving to death, which is what we ultimately decided was the reason to let her go. And I just like held her, and there was this like peace where she was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God I don't have to like keep trying anymore. And like, I don't know you, I just met you, but like, thank God.
Yeah. You know? But you're right, that is an honor. Yeah. I have felt that, you know, that is a gift that we were there for. We didn't realize that was going to be our purpose.
Yeah.
Well, with Big Girl and Layla, but with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we were hoping we'd get some time with her.
And I think that's part of it, though. Like, sometimes we fight for the ones like Marigold, who it's an uphill battle the whole way, and we fight, 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 and that's the gift. And then sometimes the gift is saying, like,
the fight's
it's
over.
Time and yeah. we're gonna be a part of that, and we're gonna hold you while it happens, and we're going to keep your ashes here at Deity Headquarters and always remember you. Like, you're not just a dog that's forgotten.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving all those dogs that opportunity.
Of course, they all deserve it. And I learn as much from them as, you know, they get to heal at my house. And I don't know, it's just, it's a privilege to have them and to see how each one thrives and goes on to become a completely different dog after they leave my house.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, so cool. And you're very public about all of your fosters. How can people see you, the foster dogs that you have, your journey with foster on your Instagram?
Yeah, I post the dogs pretty regularly on Instagram. I'm trying to get better about it. And so I'm at just my name, Kat Ramsburg at Instagram, or A Cat and Her Dogs is what it's called.
That's cute.
Cat
that's
with
cute.
A K.
Cat with a K. Dogs. Cat and Her Dogs.
And we collaborate a lot too on the posts. So they will be on our page as well.
Yeah. I'm slowly learning how to do reels because Mary Golds has made a wonderful subject.
Yeah. She goes viral on Instagram.
She did go viral.
They love her.
They love her.
I mean, what's not to love? A little, how many pounds is she?
She's just five pounds.
5 pound chihuahua.
Five.
Yeah, I think 3 pounds of it is hair and 1 pound is sass. And then there's some bones in there.
There's a couple of bones
in there. Yeah.
And that may be a couple of screws now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Some metal.
It's always also fun to think about, like, who's coming next, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because we'll see. I mean, we don't know. We haven't met them yet.
I know.
But they're going to be really lucky.
I'm sure you guys will find some messed up dog in a back corner kennel.
Our favorite.
And call me, and you'll just send me a picture and go, Cat?
Question.
No pressure, but
that's her. Yeah. I'm like, I realize this is pressure, and I'm happy to give it to you. She's like, no pressure.
No pressure, but all the pressure.
We can't take this dog unless you say yes, but no pressure.
I'm always like, of course.
Yeah, you are. You're always
of course. Bring them. Bring them.
Thank you for being.
I just
there
washed
for
my
us.
Rugs, but bring them.
Well, now we know you have Ruggable, so we'll just buy you detergent. There you go.
Even better.
It's our gift to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Marigold, do you have anything to say before we go?
Thank you for being here, Marigold.
Thank you for being here, Marigold.
Say thank you for believing in me and getting me out.
She's not saying thank you for anything.
No. She's saying I deserve this.
Yeah, you guys are welcome to be in my presence.
Yes. Long live the queen, Marigold.
With her little tongue hanging out the side.
So cute. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for being here.
You guys always say yes to the broken ones, the sick ones. And
so do you.
I've fostered a lot of places and... I really love being a deity foster.
Oh, thank you. We love you. Having a reason.
We love our sisterhood.
Yeah.
Hey. She said, guys, we're done.